Welcome to the Moms in Prayer podcast, a place where we put our finger on the pulse of what's happening in the world today so we can better pray for and equip the next generation. Our focus will always be revival and spiritual awakening in our children, our schools, and our motherhood. We're so glad you're here with us. Let's get started. Hey, sweet friends, so glad you're here with us today. I'm your host, Lee Nienheis, and I'm thrilled to announce that by the time you listen to this podcast, my kids will be in school. I'm so excited about finding rhythm and routine that comes during the school year, and that includes my Moms in Prayer group finally beginning again. I miss them. Fall's in the air, and that means Bless Our School Sunday is around the corner. Bless Our Schools Sunday is September 16th this year, and it's a day where local churches and Moms in Prayer group partner together to pray for and honor the teachers and school workers in their midst. You can find all the details and promo information on our website at momsinprayer.org. I'm excited to introduce you to today's guest. I met Susan C. at the Hearts at Home conference last year where we were both teaching, and I knew I'd met a woman I wanted to spend more time with. You may recognize Susan as one of the voices and faces of the IF Gathering and IF Equip study. She's a popular author and speaker, but most of all, she's an intentional mom, and you are going to love her. Well, my good friend Susan, welcome to the Moms in Prayer podcast. I'm so glad you're here.
This is exciting. This is going to be great.
Susan, I love you so much, and I'm looking forward to a million years of friendship with you, but I can't wait for my friends on the other side of the screen to get to know you. Can you tell us a little bit about your family?
We are a family of nine. We have seven children.
Amazing.
And yes, some people just immediately fell off their chair or stopped walking on the treadmill when they heard that, wherever they are listening to this. But yes, we have seven children, and we have one boy, six girls, and the follow-up question most people ask is, where is he in the birth order? So he's the oldest. As of this past weekend, he is 22, and my youngest is 8. She'll be 9 this fall. We have 3 that are in college now and 4 that we are still homeschooling. We are entering into our 19th year of homeschooling.
You have done the gamut of parenting. And even tomorrow, you're taking your daughter to New York City to go to college. You are one of the bravest moms I have ever met.
I still can't get over it myself, to be honest with you. I'm like, we're taking our 18-year-old daughter to New York City and leaving her. Is this smart? Is this right? Are we doing this? And yeah, we're completely doing this. This has just been a journey of a lifetime to see God's faithfulness to make this happen for her. And we're excited to see what he has in mind.
Oh, well, you talked about being homeschool mom, and I know that we have a bunch of homeschool listeners. So shout out to the homeschool tribe. Yeah. Have you homeschooled all along the way?
All along the way. Never did anything else.
What brought you to that decision?
It's interesting because I can give an answer now with a whole lot of perspective. But when I started, I genuinely wanted to have an opportunity to raise my children in an environment and in a culture where their faith was not separate from what they were learning. I know that as my husband and I were both in public schools, we found this experience where we went to school and there was this life experience Monday through Saturday, and then Sunday was church. But there was no real connection or integration between the two. And I did not want that to happen for my children. I didn't want them to feel like there was this invisible division between the two parts of their lives, that learning and faith go together so beautifully because that's the way God designed it. So I really wanted that. And then the other things that are benefits from homeschooling, the academics, the opportunity to set your own pace, to be creative in the way that you learn, and the experiences you get to attach to that, all of that just became bonus for us. But it started out as just truly a focus on being able to integrate our faith along with the children's education.
Well, every time you graduate one, you must feel some incredible sense of accomplishment because in so many ways, you graduate with that child.
Okay, so honestly, I have told my family that when my youngest graduates, I'm throwing a party for her and for me, and I'm out of here. Like, I'm taking a vacation of a lifetime because I refuse to add it up. Someone else is probably already doing the math. If I'm about to enter my 19th year and she's turning 9, like how many more years I have to go, I will have invested a lot of time.
Right.
I won't add the numbers, because if I add the numbers, I'll be tempted to quit, right? I'm like, never mind, we're not going to make it. But yes, that's going to be the trip of a lifetime, because I have done kindergarten, my own education in kindergarten, plus I've done kindergarten 7 more times. books that I've read so many times now that I probably should recite them verbatim, and it's just an experience. So as she closes out my homeschooling journey, as she finishes up each grade, it's truly a sense of accomplishment. It's also marked with a sense of relief, let's be real. Finally, I'm out of first grade. Whew, finally, second grade. You know? We've been kind of stuck here for a while.
Listen, when you get algebra done for the last time, we're going for chips and salsa. I don't even.
Please. Hey. So I'm all for the queso. I'm big on that. Come on, Texas girl here. I'm like, we're going to do the queso.
Me too. I think that you are one of the most intentional women I've ever met. Mm. And I see that reflected in how you conduct yourself, the things that you say, reflecting before you speak, and I appreciate that so much. But you've written a book on intentional parenting. You speak at conferences. That's how we met. And I want to talk today about your 12 tips. It's actually your book about intentional parenting. I'm seeing lived out in your life right now. I want to just kick these off with you. So 12 steps, 12 ways to be an intentional parent. Give me the number one step.
All right. Number one, make everyone in the family feel valuable and important, including mom. Mm. And this is so huge, because I think we as moms can be so great about making everybody in our family feel accepted and heard and seen and cared for and provided for. And we end up running ourselves so ragged, and we're exhausted and overworked. We're exhausted from caring for the needs of our family, plus in our marriage, plus in our community, plus in our church. Like, we're involved in constantly giving, which is a beautiful thing to be a giver until it's too much. And so I really think that intentional parents really set this standard within their home and within their family, that everyone feels valued and important. In the practical sense, one of those things in my family looks like, my husband was very intentional about having my children thank me for dinner. Mm. So if we sat down to eat, they would say, thank you, mom, even if they didn't like it. Like, there's broccoli on their plate and they're thinking, why? We don't like broccoli. They still were encouraged by my husband. Hey, say thank you to your mom for taking the time to prepare and serve this food to us. Like, thank you for the time you invested. She could have been doing other things, but she wanted to make sure we were taken care of. We say thank you. And so now, to this day, it's a habit now within our household to thank whomever is fixing the meal. And it's a way to say, I see you, I value you, I appreciate you. And we give that to one another. And that includes giving that to mom.
I appreciate that so much, because making you feel valued doesn't mean you're at the spa every day. It doesn't mean you're getting free time every day, especially not as a homeschool mom. It simply means that we're expressing respect and concern for every person present, including you.
Exactly. It's important.
All right. So the second tip, build strong family connections. Your family's good at this. Tell me how you do this.
I just find that it's difficult to impossible to love people that you're not connected with. And it's difficult to connect with people that you're not spending time around. Mm. So in our lives today can be so busy running around from this activity to that activity. We could fill our calendars up with so much to do. And I want to encourage families to be very intentional about how they're spending time together, so that they are building connections and recognizing that as they build connections, they're able to deepen their connection of love and the bond within their household. And that shapes everything else. We are going to go through hard times within our families. We're going to go through challenging times within our marriages. And it's going to be those bonds of love and how tightly we've woven those together and how tightly we've tethered ourselves to one another that are going to help us to ride out the storms that we will encounter.
So number 3, speak the truth in love. Even when it's scary and hard, you say. Even when it's scary and hard. How does that play out in your home?
There are times where I think quite often we get this false definition of love. And we think of love as the kind, soft, fuzzy, happy emotion. It is that. And love is also true. And sometimes the truth is hard to do. And we want to be willing to speak the truth and love to our children, even when it's hard, even when we don't want to say it. Like, we're very cautious about hurting their feelings or making them feel bad. Like, we want to really be able to speak up when we see that they're forming bad habits or they're starting to choose wrong friendships that are leading them in a bad direction. When we see that they're starting to spend their time on things that aren't fruitful for them, that are actually going to be distractions and hindrances and are going to form bad habits in them. And we don't want to withhold from them out of fear of hurting them. And we also, here's a real trap I see right now. We also don't want to be too tired to be the parent to stand up and speak for our children, because we're like, I'm tired. They're quiet. They're busy. They're distracted. Great. At least I get a minute. And I totally get that feeling. I mean, if a mother of seven don't get that, I don't know who will, right?
Right.
And at the same time, I have to say to myself sometimes, I have to look myself in the mirror and say, I'm never too tired to be there for my children. And if they need me, you know, when you have a large family, you've got the older ones who tend to have a body clock where they're up later at night, and you've got the younger ones where their body clock has them up early in the morning, and you can kind of feel like the candle's burning on both ends. But if that is the time when their hearts are tender enough to hear the truth, then I need to pace my day so that I'm available at those times when they can receive it.
Wow, that's a word. And I know that's true. You probably have this too, maybe with your boy, but we're riding in the car. And as long as he's eating and sitting side by side with me in the car and we're alone, his heart is open to me and we will talk. He's probably not going to sit down and look me straight in the eye with a cup of coffee in his hand and have one of those moments with me anymore, or not right now at this phase that we're in. But oh, you're so right. Finding that time when we can have a heart to heart. So tip number four.
Number four, admit when you're wrong. I'm not just wrong quite often. I will jack it all the way up and be just out there. So yes.
Yes, me too. Okay, so how do we ask for forgiveness?
You know, we just have a simple phrase around here. We say, when we mess up, we fess up. Like, we just own it. We have this big thing about taking personal responsibility. And that personal responsibility is not blame. We're not blaming ourselves and we're not blaming others. We're just owning our part of whatever mistake was happening, whatever mistake happened, whatever misunderstanding, we own our part. That language of personal responsibility gives everybody an opportunity to see their part. But before I'm willing to go to my children and insist that they confess where they've been wrong, I want to model for them that I'm willing as their mother to own it when I mess up as well. In past generations, it was a big thing that I'm the parent. And as the parent, what I said goes. And even if I made a mistake, I'm still the parent. And they're just trying to own the position. And I can understand trying to maintain a place of authority. I think that we as parents today could probably learn a lesson from that. I think we could have switched over from one ditch to the other of moving from this authority background into this friendship with our children at way too young of an age. However, when we just take the time to teach our children and model for our children personal responsibility, then it's just saying that when I'm wrong, I'm willing to own it. And now when you're wrong, I want you to recognize that I'm modeling for you how we handle it when we make a mistake.
So good. And necessary. Our kids have to see us ask for forgiveness and confess when we're wrong. And what I love most about this is that it allows them to play the part of the forgiver as well as the one who's always asking for forgiveness. And I think what you said, asking forgiveness does not mean that we've let go of that authority. It's just owned our part so that God can flow through, rush through and work. And at Moms in Prayer, we have the step of confession, silent confession, in the middle of every hour of prayer, because it really does free us up as moms.
And it frees our children from having this false idea that we as parents are perfect. My parents always just have the answers. My parents always just know what to do. They always know what to say. And it really allows them to see that we make mistakes. We are acknowledging our mistakes. And when we do that, we are permissioning our children to also make mistakes and recognizing that making a mistake is not final, nor is it fatal. It's an opportunity for us to step into a place of owning the part we had in that mistake. And so we can clean it up and we can move on.
Exactly. And mama needs Jesus every day.
Come on.
Every day.
All day long.
All day long. Okay, step five. Build a teamwork attitude within the home. I've been to your home. I've seen teamwork in practice. And rumor has it, you haven't done much grocery shopping for a couple of years. I love this tip. Please elaborate. I'm desperate.
Listen, the truth is, I think that the way that the Lord uses motherhood is he uses it as a refining process. And I recognize that I am just surrounded by a lot of women that their refining process didn't take as quite as much heat as mine. That's why I have 7 children and they have 2, or they have 3. Like, there was a lot of refining that needed to happen over here. But one of the things that a large family will teach you is that you simply can't do it all. Like, it will never work if I try to be the superhero mom and put my cape on and make all the things happen, because there's just simply not enough time in the day to ever meet all of the needs that are happening around me. So this teamwork attitude is simply a survival tip. And I just want to pass it on to other moms before they crash and burn like I did, because I was trying to do all the things and it wasn't even possible. But what I found along the way is that my children began to feel more confident and empowered because I not only asked them to do things, but I put that upon them as a responsibility and the way that they could contribute to our household, and that they felt a part of something. And it wasn't that things were being done for them, quite often things that they could have done for themselves, but they were in this position of, this is my responsibility and my family depends on me as part of the team to do these activities, whether it's take out the trash or wash the dishes. And just like you said, it eventually became, when I had drivers, that they would do the grocery shopping for our household. And I have not been grocery shopping in a few years.
Hallelujah. But I was thinking about the moms who are listening with 1 or 2 kids. It's not helpful to them ultimately for you to do everything.
No, it actually creates an inner conversation with our children. I did an interview with a licensed professional counselor, and I talked to her about this dynamic. And she said, what can happen with our children when they're in the developmental stage of that preteen teen age is that they have this inner conversation that if my parents are doing things for me, it's because they don't believe that I could do it myself. And I already had doubts about my own beliefs, but based upon the way they're acting, they're confirming what I believe, and it creates this negative emotional cycle that they have, this negative psychological spiral that they hit, where they say, I don't know if I can do it. And the people around me that I trust the most don't think I can do it either. And they start to spiral downward. So when we empower them and we equip them and we permission them to step up and use their gifts, their talents, their energy, their focus, and their attention to contribute to our household, it causes something in them to rise up to say, my parents would never ask that of me if they didn't believe it was possible. So I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to get it done. And that is what builds confidence for them.
I think this daisy chains right onto your next tip, because tip number 6 is give each person lots of praise and do it often. I imagine that's a part of the building up process that you've done all along the way.
Yes. Part of this came along at a time when I wrote this particular one, because I noticed in myself that I was really good at finding the ways in which my children were struggling and pointing those things out. So I'm saying, hey, you're not cleaning your room consistently, or hey, you're not being polite or kind to your sister. Hey, you're not. And I was just finding these things that I thought I was finding the places where they were weak and trying to help them get stronger. But instead, I was in this pattern of pointing out their faults and pointing out where they were failing. And I could just notice that when I would call their names, I could kind of see this drop of the shoulders, like, oh man, what'd I do this time? And so I put this one in there to remind myself that there's always something praiseworthy within each one of my children, and to be the person that calls that out of them. So not to focus on where they're failing, but to find those things that are praiseworthy. And when they are in moments where even they see their faults greater than they should, and those things are more in focus than the greatness that's already within them, that they would hear their mother's voice calling forth the greatness in them and speaking greatness over them, and not being afraid to, that would go back to speak the truth in love, being willing to say, hey, you know what, dude, you're just really killing it right here. You're not doing good. Be willing to say that, but their consistent voice that they hear from me is one of praise, so that when I call their name, they don't expect another like, oh boy, she's going to tell me again where I'm failing it. But they're saying, you never know with mom, but more than likely, well, they don't, they really don't know with mom, but you know, but overall, I recognize that my mom comes to me, or my dad comes to me, and their voice is one of encouragement and praise. And that becomes a culture in the household where you're hearing a brother affirm a sister, and you're hearing a sister affirm a brother. And that just becomes a natural culture within the family.
This sometimes can take a huge shift in a mom's mentality. I've found myself going through critical phases and needed to pray and say, Father, I need you to show me some wins right now. And he's so faithful to show up and do that, because there are seasons that are hard with each one of our kids. And it can be difficult to see the character that's underneath the choices that they're making, or the huffs that they give out in the teenage years or whatever. And I'm sure prayer has played a large part of that discovery of truth and praiseworthiness in your kids, for you too.
I remember one time I took my kids out on a trail. It was a paved trail where you could rollerblade and push a stroller. I went out because a friend of mine was going out there and she was going to rollerblade. And I was like, girl, yeah, me too. I'm not slightly competitive. I'm very competitive. So I was like, man, if she could do this, I can do this. We're out here. We're doing this. And I got out there and I was not in a good stroller for that. So like if I put any kind of weight on that, it would tip the stroller. So it was like, it wasn't very weight balanced, and I wasn't very good at rollerblading. So there's like two strikes on us here. Like I don't have a great stroller and I'm not a great rollerblader. And I forget how long the trail is, but it's one of those where you have to go out, you have to come back. It's not like it's circling somewhere where you could shave a big old corner off. I wish. So I got way out there before I realized this is never going to work. And I had to kick off those rollerblades and walk on the hot Texas concrete, pushing that stroller back. And I'm like, sure that I am just killing my feet because my feet are burning on this concrete. And I remember thinking to myself all of these thoughts like, Susan, man, this is so dumb. Why would you even do this? And why are you out here? And you should have never done this. And I'm just beating myself up in my head. And I remember hearing these little voices from my kids in the stroller going, we believe in you, mom. You can do it. This is great. We love you. And I thought, that is what we built in our home. And when I was in this negative thought spiral, it was their voices that helped me to get through that walk without coming out with this horrible memory of that day. Instead, what I remember was those little voices of, we believe in you, mom, you can do it. And I just think we can do that, not just when they're little and we're cheering on the fact that they're walking or feeding themselves or dressing themselves, but when they're going off to school and they're encountering hard conversations and they're making tough decisions, when they're in high school or going off to college and they're making big decisions about their future, that we can continue that affirming and allow them to affirm us.
So here we go. Delegate responsibility.
Oh, number seven. Yes. So this just goes right back to what I was talking about the children really catching a sense of confidence because they have responsibility and we've asked them to step into that place. Because in our household, we have this relationship between privilege and responsibility. And for our children, if they want to have increased privileges, then what they're asking for is increased responsibility. And that keeps us from getting into a habit of providing things for them without asking for them to stand up and really own a place where they have a sense of appreciation for that thing. Let's give that a practical on that. So if we grow up and we give our children their own room and we give them their own video game system and we give them their own space and time to do that and we give them their own access to Netflix or the internet, or you know what I'm saying? Like they just get all these things that they're just handed to. There's this sense in them that that's just how things are. Like that is how it should be. This is now a right or an expectation, and they no longer see it as the privilege that it is. Because as parents, what we've agreed to is to care for and nurture them and provide for them. But all these other things that we do, and we do a whole lot of other things, those are bonuses. Those are privileges. And if we want to raise children who are appreciative and who show gratitude, then we want to mark for them what are the basics and what are the privileges? And if they say, well, I want to have the opportunity to stay up later at night, or I want to be able to go out with my friend and I want to spend the night at a friend's house, or I want to go out with them without the parents around to the movies or to bowling or whatever, then helping them to see that you would love that for them. But that privilege requires that they show you that they have the maturity to handle that. And how do they show that maturity? It's because they've been faithful in the responsibilities that you put in their hands. But if you don't give them responsibilities, they don't have that opportunity to show a pattern of maturity and a pattern of responsibility that justifies the privileges that are in their life.
Ever since you talked to me about this a few weeks ago, I have been practicing this more and more. Like, I'm sorry, if you would like increased privileges, you will have increased responsibilities. Those words are rolling out of my mouth. I'm sure my kids are like, oh, Susan, Miss C, what have you done to us?
I get that a lot. I have a lot of parents who say their kids do not want them to hang out with me. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And then I get to meet their children when they're older. And they're like, that turned things around for our family. So immediately, they don't love it. Eventually, they appreciate it.
I love this. I am praying we have enough time at the end of the episode because I'm going to make you tell the story about your son and the bus. If I can get to that point in time, we have to tell that story. Okay, so number 8, believe in possibilities.
If we as intentional parents are going to be anything, I am asking for us to be optimistic about our families and our households, and that we can see a brighter day and a better day ahead in spite of the challenges that we're facing today, because we're going to face challenges. Goodness knows in our own household, we faced financial hardships. We've faced stressed out, strung out marriage moments where we're just like, do we really love each other? Is this going to work? I'm not so sure. There's certainly have been times where I've looked at my children and thought, where did they come from? Because they could not possibly be mine, because this is not at all what I would have expected from my child or from anyone that I would love so much to find out that I don't really like them. You know, like, I'm clear, I've always loved my children, but there were times I didn't like them at all. Mm-hmm. And that is a tough thing to say as a mom, because moms aren't supposed to say that. Moms are supposed to say, I always loved my babies. No, I always loved them. And I didn't have moments where I want to put them on the curb and just be like, here you go. Like, anybody want to take this one? Like, because I can't anymore. Right? I'm done. They're frustrating me. And what I want to always come back to is seeing that brighter day ahead, so that the sun might not be shining today and the birds might not be singing today and the rainbow might not be out, but trusting and believing that there are brighter and better days ahead, and telling that and forecasting that within the household to say, right now, this is hard. Right now, this is ugly. This is a mess. But I believe with everything in me, I have a deep and resounding hope that there are better days ahead.
Well, that seems biblical. How can we pray when everything seems dark and dismal?
In so many ways, I find that my own journey in faith with the Lord has expanded beyond what I had in mind when I first came to faith and in my younger years in my faith journey. So initially, I would have thought that prayer looks like me with my eyes closed and my head bowed, praying words to the Father. And I have grown to see that prayer can look many different ways. And sometimes it's an honoring thing to just get before the Lord and be silent and to be still before Him, and to see that there are things in our hearts that we can't always put a word to. And just because we don't have the words doesn't mean that our hearts aren't praying to the Father and calling out to Him. And it's almost like if you've ever had a child who's been in a scary situation, maybe they're scared of a dog or they're scared of something outside or scared of something in the grass, and they look at you with this panicked look in their eyes where they're just saying, come get me, but they never uttered a word. Mm-hmm. You as a mother still knew that was a cry out to you through their eyes, through their tears, even though they never said a word to you. They never screamed, Mama. They were calling out to you. If we can do that with our children, how much more does our Father see us when we just fall into a chair, or we slump in a sofa, or we lay across our beds and we don't have words and we're just still before Him? And then if He graces us to utter a word, to utter a cry, to shed the tears, to express the hurt, the pain, the frustration we're feeling, to not limit that and say that's not prayer, Because in my heart and mind, that's praying before the Father. And if that's the best your situation can do today, call that good and trust that the Father heard even that. And if there's more you can say that looks like the prayers you hear other people praying and the things you've heard other people saying, beautiful. But if it's not that and you're not there, trust that that's good enough.
I love that. I don't know how many times I've talked to women who say, I just went to a Moms in Prayer hour with my friends and sat next to my sister and did not say a word, wept the whole time. And that is praying. That is being still before him. That's so worth it. The whole podcast is worth it, Susan, just for them to hear those words. And sitting next to a sister who can pray beside you, that's worth everything too.
Huge.
Okay. Number 9, never stop learning.
So my husband and I had a personal challenge for years where we challenged ourselves to go to one marriage workshop and one parenting workshop every single year. Every year we were looking for opportunities to go and sit under someone who was teaching from a book, either through a book study or just giving out teaching tools that they've learned, because we recognized that we only knew when we came into parenting, we came in with our own experience with our parents. But there certainly wasn't the time that we had set aside where we had equipped ourselves to be good parents. And so with that humility and that understanding, we don't know what we're doing. We have children and we're parenting, but we have very limited experience. And so I have this formula that I have for wisdom, and that is K plus E over T. And that K plus E is knowledge plus experience over time is how we gain wisdom.
That's good.
So he and I recognized that sitting in the classes, we were gaining knowledge based upon other people's experience, and they had invested time in that. And so we were able to gain wisdom at a much faster rate than we trying to learn that on our own through our own experience, and we're spending time doing that, we could only get so far. But if we would tap into the experiences of others and pair their experience with the knowledge that we were willing to sit down and humble ourselves to read and to learn, that the time frame was not just our own individual days of learning, but that we were tapping into the time of others who have invested in learning and the years that they've already gone through these things. So the wisdom that we walk in then is so much greater than what we started with.
K, knowledge.
Plus E.
Experience over time equals wisdom.
Yeah.
So good. All right. 10, avoid the trap of perfectionism.
Yeah, it's a real trap out there, isn't
it? That's a thing.
I mean, God bless where we are in our motherhood journey now, because I would say just comparison alone is what we had before. But now the comparison doesn't turn off just when we go in our homes. Because before it was when we were out and engaging with one another, we could compare our children with someone else's children, our marriage with someone else's marriage, our home with someone else's home, and then we'd go home. Now it doesn't turn off because we've got social media and we've got all these ways of seeing all these things that we see other people seem to be doing well, and we want to do things well. And one of the real traps that I hear moms in my community or moms that I speak to at conferences all over the world now is they want to make the right choice. They want the right school and the right neighborhood and the right house and the right clothes and the right meals and the right this and that for their kids. But what they're really saying is, I don't want to make a mistake, which means we're on this highway that we're speeding and racing, trying to outrun perfectionism. But it's hot on our heels, and we wouldn't always admit that we're in perfectionism, but we're in it, and we're in it deep. And how do we know? Because just the sheer desire to care for our family leaves us exhausted.
And we live in a social media society where, I don't know about you, but I do screen the pictures I put on social media. I mean, I put ones on there without makeup periodically, but for the most part, I'm not putting ones on there in my real life kitchen sink right now. You know, dishes heaped up, or we're not Insta-storying the fight that we just had with our 15-year-old or whatever.
Truly. Yes. So we recognize that the Word of God tells us that the joy of the Lord is our strength. So when we find ourselves in this place where we're exhausted because of the perfectionism that's running in our heads of trying to do everything right, then we recognize that we end up in exhaustion. That is robbing us of joy. And joy is the very thing we need to feel the strength to carry out the call that God has for us. So perfectionism is an absolute trap, and it's a thief that robs us of our joy.
All right. So tip number 11 probably makes this perfectionism thing easier to fight. So 11, keep things simple.
Keep it simple. I can make almost anything super complicated. I could make going to the grocery store. I could make what activity we're going to do this weekend as a family. I could make choosing a movie complicated thing. And it's just, simplicity is an art, and it's a gift because it redeems time. It keeps you from spending your valuable resource of time and attention on things that ultimately don't matter. If we can find ways to simplify our lives, it gives us greater peace and a sense of ease about our day. And what are some ways that we could do that practically? Meal planning. So I shared with you when you were here that for the longest time when I was in charge of breakfast, my children understood that breakfast meant oatmeal. There was not the eggs and the pancakes and the bacon. There was not a whole list of different cold cereal options here. There was oatmeal. And it did not stop my children every single morning from asking, "Hey, Mom, what's for breakfast? Hello, have we just met? Hi, I'm your mother. It's oatmeal." And guess what? When I went to the grocery store, guess what I did not have to struggle with? Like, what do I need to buy for breakfast? I had to buy oatmeal for good gravy's sake. Like, it's simple. Like, there's no struggle here. It eliminated that for me. And I recognize everybody's not going to go that simple. They're like, okay, I don't even want oatmeal at all. That's cool. But what is it that you could do that could simplify things? Well, you understand that every single Friday night, our family has pizza, or we always go out on Friday nights. It's just what we do. I don't have to think about it. Any way that we can pre-make our decisions, it keeps us from being in the moment of having to figure all those things out, because we've taken the time up front to think ahead, and now we're just walking out the decisions that have been made.
I love it. Even just one area where we could pick to simplify opens the door to more time, more bandwidth in our brains, which I don't know about you, but I'm dying for bandwidth in my brain right now.
It's so critical, right?
We got to find some things to simplify. And number 12, spend time with other parents who are also intentional, which is one of the reasons why I want to be your friend, Susan.
We are friends.
We are friends. So how have you looked for friends like this who are doing this?
That's really key. So what I have found, and usually when I'm speaking, I just say, if you've got a mom who's in the room while I'm talking about how to be an intentional mom, here's your circle. These are your women. These are your tribe. They're right here. Find them, get their name, get their number, connect with them, make that a thing. If anyone's listening to this podcast and they're saying, well, I'm not in the room when Susan's speaking, then I would say find other moms who are listening to this podcast or who are listening to my podcast. You know, I have a podcast called Mentor for Moms Podcast. And through that, I give people ways to connect with me through my website. I have a Facebook group for women who are other intentional moms, and they're all over the nation, but they all have a heart to be more intentional. And through those different resources, or through getting a copy of my book and reaching out to other moms and saying, you want to read this book together? You want to encourage one another and how we can be more intentional? Really finding ways that you can extend your own desire to be more intentional and find other women who could share that with you is what will eventually give you this connection to women who are not committed to all doing it the same way. Like, all of my friends don't homeschool. All of my friends don't have a large family. All of my friends are not married, but we all seek to be intentional, and we all have that as a focus. And we're clear that it's not about looking a certain way, but it's about being in a place where we live true to our core values and we honor one another's core values. And that's what makes our relationships with one another rich.
I would love for them to be able to connect with you. And I also think that you find your tribe also in a Moms in Prayer group. There's something different about a mom who shows up an hour a week to pray for her kids. That says something about a mom. And it's a great place to start finding friends and saying, hey, do you want to work on this? Do you want to make this a goal to be more intentional with our kids this year? And I think like 12 tips all at once may seem overwhelming, but the truth is one or two is a great starting place, right?
Absolutely. And the great thing is, because we've recorded this, you can go back and listen to this next week or next month, come back and revisit it so that you could say, you know, I did one or two takeaways that first time. I'm going to listen to it again and pick up something new and fresh and use that as just a way to continue to reinforce that desire to be more intentional at a pace that has a lot of grace to it.
Okay. We have to have you tell the story about your son and the bus. I mean, like, this is the last time we were together, I almost flipped out because, you know, I'm going through the launching my son thing and his dad deals with him totally different than I do. And you said that's a good thing. They need dads or men in their life who are pushing them because us mamas were like mama hens, but the dads do stuff different. So, okay, please tell the bus story.
Oh my goodness. So my son was getting ready to go to community college and he was going to take some dual credit classes while he was still in high school. And my husband was stepping up to help him get that done. I was like, this is great. I'm so happy about this. And they go off to the community college to turn in some paperwork that my husband needed to sign and he had to be there to do that. And while they're there, the registrar mentions that there's a test that my son needs to take. And so my husband says, wonderful. When is the test? And they said, well, we have one in just 30 minutes or 45 minutes. He says, great. He'll take that one. What you must know about my son is he's a planner. He likes to think things through. He hates surprises. Last minute things like this freak him out. So my son is going, I'm doing what? I have to take an important test in order to get into community college and I have to do it in 30 minutes. I'm like, thanks, Dad. And so my hubby turns to the registrar and says, well, how long will the test take? And she said, oh, it'll take at least a couple hours for him to take the test. And so my husband's like, oh no, I'm not waiting around here. That's too long. I got to get to work. I got to get things done. So he turns to my son and he says, hey, you're going to stay here. You're going to take this test. And then I want you to just hop on the city bus, take it clear across town and meet me at my job. And then we'll be together the rest of the day. You'll come home with me. And I'm listening to the story as my husband's telling me this plan. And I'm at home going, wait a minute, you did what? Like, he didn't know he was going to take a test. He was like, he'll be fine. It's over stuff he's already been doing in high school. What's the big deal? And then I'm like, well, wait, you have him taking the bus? Which bus? He was like, I don't know. I was like, hold on. You don't know which bus? He's like, I don't know what bus. Why do I need to know what bus? He's taking the bus. And I'm like having this major meltdown in my brain going, you didn't tell him what bus.
Well, you guys don't take buses all the time, right?
We don't. I know. Good gosh, no. We've seen the bus, but we haven't been on it. You know? And so I'm thinking, surely if we're going to put him on the bus, we're going to tell him which bus and which bus stop and what time is the bus coming and how much the bus costs. I was like, does he even have money? Like, what are the things that's happening here? And my husband is just cool as a cucumber. He's just like, I don't even understand what you're flipping out about. He's fine. And if he isn't fine, he'll figure it out. I believe in him. Now I'm going to work. And I'm at home sweating and thinking, do I go over there? Do I get my son? Do I help him out? And I didn't. I did great. I left him there. He got on the bus. He had his own experiences with that. He made some mistakes, but he eventually got where he needed to go. He was just fine with it. He was freaked out that it happened the way it did, but he got through it and all is well. And I just recognized some things have shifted in our parenting. And my husband has completely different ideas about how to train up a child than I do.
I love that so much because it's such a good reminder that we could be headed in one direction and all of a sudden somebody shakes up the situation and we're having to be intentional in a totally different environment. And that happens throughout parenting. Susan, I love you so much. And I love that you have such a great sense of humor about this whole parenting thing. So would you wrap up our time together by praying for us that our moms and prayer moms and our listeners today would have the courage to be intentional?
I am going to actually read a blessing from my book Over the Moms and then close it out in prayer. So this blessing, may a deep and real sense of purpose fuel all your parenting efforts and cause you to become more intentional as a parent. May you become a parent who is able to rise above the noise and distraction that cry out for your attention every day. May you focus on living true to your core values. May you understand the importance of dedication and not allow other pursuits to drain your energy, leaving you worn out. May your family always get the best of you and not just what's left of you. So Lord God, I just speak that blessing over every mom and every dad who's listening to this podcast and who has listened to our conversation today, may you be glorified as they lift their hands to you and ask you to show them how in their own household, in their own unique way, you are calling them to walk in a more purposeful and intentional way. And may they be brave enough and courageous enough to trust you and to follow you. And we thank you in advance for the mighty ways in which you will bless the works of their hands. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Isn't Susan great? She's down to earth, but of course she is. She's intentionally parenting 7 kids, and that will keep you real, folks. You can get the list of the 12 tips that Susan shared on the Moms in Prayer website on the blog at momsinprayer.org. Before you switch to your next podcast or slide off your earbuds, would you do me a favor and leave us a review on your podcast host? If you're listening on iTunes, you can click on our show and scroll to the box that says ratings and reviews. I'd recommend 5 stars, but we want you to be honest. Honey number 4 just left a review this week, letting us know that she loves the Moms in Prayer podcast and today's episode was just for her. Thank you, honey. I love that. True story. I would like my grandma name someday to be Honey. We so value you at Moms in Prayer and hope you are being encouraged, empowered, and equipped with every podcast episode. Moms make the difference. Moms trying to be intentional. Moms just like you. See you next week.